know, I had an inability to cope with life, even as a little kid. It's like I didn't fit in well. I always used to think I'd been adopted and nobody told me. It was honestly, I used to fantasise about it. I used to think, one day my real mum and dad are going to turn up and get me out of here. You know, and I grew up in a council estate where everybody drank. It was like breathing. No, if you didn't drink, there was something very wrong with you. So to drink was normal. And it was, even as a little girl watching other people drink, I was fascinated by it. I couldn't wait to do it. It was like, that's going to be brilliant. I remember my very first drink was in a public toilet with my best mate. And we bought a bottle of Cinzano between us and 20 B&H. And we sat on a public toilet floor and drank this bottle of, it was like acid, it was horrible, it burnt our throats. But for me, it lit me up. I lay there spinning, thinking, this is it. Threw up and still thought it was it. I thought I'd found the answer to the secret to life. You know, and I couldn't wait until I did it again. I mean, I didn't do it again straight away. You know, I didn't start off as an alcoholic. And that's, you know, very common. A lot of people just start off as normal drinkers.
When do you think then you crossed that line?
For me personally, every time I picked up a drink, I lost the ability to control my drinking. And I know that now. Because I can look back in retrospect with the education that I've got now, 17 years not drinking, I know myself really well. And in retrospect, I look back and I think, you know what? Every time I picked up a drink, all bets were off. Because I didn't know when to stop. Even as a 14-year-old drinking that bottle of Cinzano, normal kids probably would have stopped when they felt sick. I didn't. I just carried on. I was the type of kid that used to get dangled over the bin at the end of the night after a bottle of cider, throwing up, because I didn't have an off switch. So for me, even though I didn't drink every day, every time I picked up a drink, I knew. I didn't know this. I know this now, but I wasn't gonna stop at one. I've never had a drink in my life. You know, when you hear people say, oh, I'm going to have a glass of wine, I still find that fascinating. I've never had a glass of anything in my life. And I used to just put it down to me being a party girl. You say, oh, God, why bother? You know, I started drinking to seek oblivion when I got into my 20s. And I started to see my husband deteriorate into alcoholism. Because I was married to an alcoholic who was further down the line than me. He was in the chronic stages of alcoholism. And my way of dealing with that was to drink more. Mm. Now, normal people don't do that.
I suppose it was your coping mechanism.
It was, yeah, because I didn't know how to deal with life.
When the lady with the knitting needles said to you, you need to go away and sort yourself out, what was your next step? I mean, did you kind of think, like, that's it, I'm going to stop alcohol from here on in, that's it, no. I'll never touch a drop again? Or
No, not at all. So I hated that woman. I really did hate her from a distance. I never saw her again after that. I carried on going to the family support group, and she was never there again. But I thought, in my head, I thought, I'm going to go and I'm going to prove to that old lady that I'm not an alcoholic, because I'd taken it personal what she'd said. I really was offended by what she said, because it had really struck a chord. And even though this woman wasn't losing sleep over what she'd said to me, for me it was haunting me. And so I tried stopping drinking. I wasn't a daily drinker. I was sometimes, but not all of the time. I used to put drink down and take up drugs. So I'd smoke marijuana every day because I didn't want to be an alcoholic like my husband. Mm. So I would put drink down and I would smoke dope. And I'd think, there you go, obviously not an alcoholic, because I cannot drink on a day. Because I had so many preconceptions of what an alcoholic looked like. Mm. I thought you had to drink every day, you had to drink spirits, you usually lived on the streets. I didn't think many women were alcoholic, believe it or not.
Do you know what? You've hit on a really interesting point. I'll be honest with you. When I came here today, I suppose I, like a lot of people, had a perception in my head of what an alcoholic would look like. You were saying, you know, 20 months clean. No one looking at you would ever think that you'd had a problem, you know, as recently as that. How is it when you tell people about the fact you're in recovery, or do you not? Do you prefer to keep it to yourself?
I'm really proud of it, actually. I can remember you saying about what does the an alcoholic look like. The very second meeting I went to was a child-friendly meeting, and I walked in and I thought, oh, I'm in this is a creche. There's young mums here, you know, and their kids are running around. That's the thing that really struck me. And in fact, the very first meeting I went to, I'd gotten round to the wrong entrance, and I couldn't get in to the door, and there were some street drinkers lying there with their cans of special brew, comatose. And I thought, this is what you've come to. This is actually what you are now. And I walked round the corner, and there was this strapping, handsome chap standing there saying, "You're looking for the fellowship, darling." I said, "Yes, I am." And I walked in, and there was all these normal people, really, you know, professional, educated, articulate, smart, suited and booted, ready to go off to work. And yeah, it was just
alcoholism doesn't discriminate. You often hear people talk about hitting the lowest point before they were able to kind of pick themselves up. Was that how it was for you? Was there a moment?
Yeah, I had a rock bottom. I'd spent 6 weeks in Spain the summer before I stopped drinking. And I started off that holiday. It's quite we've got an apartment there, and we take our children every summer for the break during the school holidays. And I can remember so vividly sitting there on day one with my drinking buddy, who's not an alcoholic, but we're sitting there with our lovely chilled bottle of rosé. We've got a long 6 weeks ahead of us. I'll tell you what, we'll have a glass of water. For every glass of wine we have, we'll have water. Well, that for me lasted 4 days. By the end of the 6 weeks, I was, to my shame, hiding tumblers of vodka around my apartment so that when I got up in the morning, to stop me shaking, dry retching, I'd have to gulp this vodka down to get back into, for people to see me as normal, so I could pour a cup of coffee or I could carry a glass of orange juice to my children without shaking and spilling it. When I came back, I decided that this drinking really has got to get back in control. So for a week before I made that trip to the doctors, I was weaning myself off. So by the time I went to my GP about my menstrual problems, I was on about probably a bottle of wine a day, which was really good for me. Aren't I doing well? And it was just, as I say, that epiphany moment when I was walking out of the doctors that I turned around and admitted. But that was my rock bottom, that holiday.
Drink is such an integral part of our society, isn't it? It's so hard. Everywhere you go, you know, it's very much part of the British way of life. Oh, do you want a drink? Or what can I get you? What are you drinking? So when you make that decision to stop drinking, it must, I would imagine, have a huge impact on your life and your social life and your friends and your family. How did you deal with that?
Oh, it was scary. I couldn't imagine. And I think that's why I was in denial for a good couple of years, because I could not imagine my life without booze. You know, everything we did was around alcohol.
Around.
Yeah, whether we were, if I went to the theatre, we'd have drinks before, drinks during the interval. What, you know, and I just really couldn't. In the first few months, I felt uncomfortable. I was so lucky and blessed that the obsession left me quite early on, which doesn't with a lot of people, but that had gone. But because my husband, we'd partied together heavily, you know, and all of a sudden I'm putting these restraints on him. So I put myself in uncomfortable positions. We did still go to bars. We still went to parties. It was a process which now has, our whole life has transformed. But the first 6 months, we went back to Spain, actually. I was 6 weeks sober, and we were in a restaurant that we'd always partied with, you know, friends and everything, and I was feeling really dodgy, feeling really uncomfortable. And I went to the toilet and I prayed. I'd been at a meeting in Spain where I'd heard a share from an American older lady who was just full of life. She'd lived
an absolutely wild time around the world, taking every drug you could think of, every drink. And she'd shared that she prayed every day to her honey pie, her HP, her higher powers, her honey pie. And I thought, yeah, I can handle that, actually. It's not God. So I went into this toilet in this restaurant and I prayed to honey pie, just help me, you know, I've got to try and, you know, get through this. I didn't want to drink. I just wanted to get rid of the sort of angst inside me. And as I walked out, I swear to God, the hairs still stand on end. Across the restaurant were two women that I recognised from Brighton, from meeting, sitting there in this restaurant. Never been introduced to them. I just recognised them, quite flamboyant characters. And I went over to them and I said, I believe you're from Brighton and you're in the fellowship. And they just held out their arms to me.